It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HR recruiters, and one actor as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. Lauren, welcome back. Today, we're going to continue our discussion on pro-social, pro bono IO work, especially looking at strategies and approaches today, which I'm betting is crucial because in some of our previous discussions, you know, doing pro bono or pro-social work, you don't want to turn it into a black hole where all of a sudden, that's everything you're doing, unless you got a lot of time and money. Why don't you give us a little bit more in depth, and then I'm sure there'll be some hands popping up.
Sure. And yes, happy to be back. You might hear a little voice because she's joining us as well. So it's interesting because as I thought about this topic, I first thought about it from a student's perspective, because as a grad student, we often have assignments where we're told to find a company that we can do a modified needs assessment on, you know, and it is very modified, but it is still work nonetheless. And so from that level, all the way up to something a little bit more involved, I mean, there's no limit, right? It can be a modified needs assessment for a graduate student, or it could be writing a job poster for, the local community center that is hosting a play. And so really understanding a little bit about what these interventions are and also the approaches, right? So from the student perspective, the approach is, hi, I'm a student. I would like to further my education, and in the process of that, I'd like to help you, right? So that's one approach. The other approach could be that you're working with an organization that provides pro bono or pro social services, and maybe they're going out and finding those opportunities for you. And then the third would be if you're an individual going out on your own, we've talked about this a little bit, maybe you're going into the community and putting those services out there. So I'm definitely interested to hear today about some of the practical interventions or approaches that everybody here has experienced. And that could be from an academic perspective, or it could even be from a personal perspective, but just to give our audience a little bit of insight as to the breadth that is the strategies and approaches in terms of pro-social.
Well, you know, I've talked to a number of IO psychologists who are recent graduates, and that's the number one question is, how do I get work? You know, how do I get involved even with an organization to get experience? Because everybody wants experience, but when you're a grad student, what experience do you have? Can this work as well for those just recent graduates who I've got to find work somewhere, even if it's pro bono, I got to get my name out there, I've got to get some experience?
So, I mean, in this regard, I would say networking is your best tool, but it doesn't, you could also leverage LinkedIn, to be quite frank. LinkedIn has some tools that offers you to market yourself. Hi. To market yourself as a creator or someone who can provide services. And through that function, you can have people seek you out, or you could also seek opportunities. So that's a really great way to start. That's also free and accessible. And the other would be leverage your professors and their networks, right? Because likely they also know people and they can introduce you to people who might be able to further your brand.
I'd be interested to know if anyone on the panel today has, you know, used LinkedIn for that purpose. I know we're probably all using it for business. But if you've had any experience with pro-social, pro-bono work on LinkedIn, that would be an interesting discussion. So do you have any key strategies or, Matthew Did you just say hi, Matthew, or do you have a question?
Oh, well, a little bit of both, but not so much a question. But yes, I do have experience in that. And
oh, great.
Yeah. So we were talking. Go ahead.
It's been like
slow, but very much valuable and beneficial, and a lot of learning on my end as well. You talk about different places. Where can we get those opportunities as recent grads? I know for my program included field work requirements. I had to do a certain number of hours, an extensive number of hours of field work before I could even graduate. And so with that came a lot of that pro bono work. Well, after I had graduated, I'm going, okay, great. I'm looking for different opportunities. And everyone's saying, we want this many years of experience. I was able to get some of that experience through different industry groups. So that's where I would definitely encourage people to look. Industry groups, particular, whether it's PSYOP, ODN, whatever it may be, they have their large national, but then they also have regional channels, regional network groups. And within those groups, there's a lot of opportunities. And that's where I've been able to jump onto a number of pro bono consulting projects to get my experience, get more connected to the network, to the industry, and to the community. So there's all sorts of opportunities for practitioners and students at any level to get their feet wet, to get a little exposure to it, to really understand, okay, great, I learned all this stuff in class. What does it look like in the real world? And how can we work together on this? And how can I build that experience in my book, in my career portfolio, to be able to say, look, I've worked with this, I've worked with that, I've done all these different things.
Well, that sounds good. I'm glad you spoke up. Dr. G, let's go to you.
I like where Dr. Matthew got us started, the direction in which he got us started, reaching out to different organizations and connecting with different organizations can provide opportunities. Something that I would like to add to that is looking locally as well. So chambers of commerce can be a good option, because even though you may not have a chapter of PSYOP or APA or something more directly related in your area, chances are you have something like a chamber of commerce or something like it, where you might be able to connect with people. And it is still the case that we have to pay our dues no matter what we do in life. Oftentimes we have to pay our dues. And one of the ways of paying our dues and setting ourselves up for future opportunities may be through pro bono work, through volunteering, through offering advice, our services to other companies, maybe even locally. Start locally. If you know a business, if you've been a customer to a business, if you used to work for a business, or someone you know or are related to is somehow connected with a business. So it may not be a bad idea to start within your own community and then branch out from there. Many companies have locations beyond just your community, and that could be an in for a national type of account. So although we would all like to be able to graduate, get our degree, and start getting paid, that's not always the case. Some people may get lucky, but not everybody. So doing that kind of thing is a good idea. And you don't have to wait until after you've completed your degree to start doing that. If you have completed your courses, maybe you're all but your dissertation in terms of your degree, you are still a potentially valuable resource for an organization, especially if you do it for free. And whether they retain your services for a fee later or become a reference for you, it could all be very valuable. So it's a matter of getting creative. And I know that social media is kind of the way we all go, because that's the thing everybody does. But don't overlook your own community. This is where you live. This is where you take advantage of businesses. This is where you're a customer. Why not participate on a whole new level within your own community?
With that idea of gauging your local community, it seems to be trade show season up here. And I think of the Peanuts cartoon strip, and Lucy, you know, she just put a sign up, 5 cents, and she did pretty well. Have IO psychologists ever experimented with like going to trade shows and trying to get the word out there, or would that be like standing on the corner and with a cup in your hand?
I think it's limited only by your imagination. Some people will be more comfortable with that than others, just like some people are more comfortable with self-promotions or marketing or sales. So it will truly depend on the person, on the individual. But I think be as open as you possibly can to make connections. If you attend trade shows, go with the idea of making connections. Maybe you don't necessarily pick up business at that instance, but maybe you make some connections, people who may become your clients later, or people who can connect you with clients later. So that's a great idea. I think whether you're an IO psychologist or anything else, trade shows can be an opportunity beyond just those who are directly within whatever industry that trade show is focused on.
Very, very true. Let's go to Lee. Hey, Lee, how are you doing?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, you know, three things come to mind, you know, immediately when with the conversation so far. One, and this is something that I tell my employees, but it's good just in general, is a notebook or a journal or you know, whatever you want to call it. Because a year from now, you're not going to remember what you did today. I'm going to be good to remember next week or tomorrow. So if you do these sort of pro bono things, it maybe there's not a whole lot of documentation because of the situation. You're working with a friend or a nonprofit or whatever. There may not be a lot of the formal documentation that you would get in a normal pay consultancy type thing. So write that stuff down, you know, give yourself details, you know, because it'll be good to help you remember to tell the story later. But it will also help you in your own mind. Hey, I've done this before. What did we do? What happened? And if you've got that stuff jotted down, you know, whether it's on paper, whether it's on, you know, OneNote or whatever, then you've got that for posterity. Second, going into like social media and specifically LinkedIn, if you're doing some of these things and you're not getting, you know, a monetary payment or whatever else, one thing that you can do is you can say, you know, hey, close friend that I did this favor for, can you please go onto LinkedIn and put a recommendation on my profile? And you can work with them to come up with something that's got some meat to it that they can put in your recommendation section. That, I mean, that's kind of advertising for you right there. And then, you know, third thing about the trade show thing, one thing that I recommend, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't think about if you don't have a job yet is, you know, you can very, you know, easily and inexpensively get yourself some business cards. So if you're a student or a new grad, or you're trying for a side hustle or whatever, make some business cards and carry them with you when you go to things like trade shows or whatever. And I mean, like I made some and I've got a QR code with my LinkedIn profile on it. And so you can hand those out to people as you go, because that's one thing people collect, because who did I meet? Oh, I met Alexander. That's right. I got his card, you know. And a neat little thing with the mobile version of LinkedIn is that you can actually pull up a QR code right there on your phone, and you can connect to people immediately at the show while they're standing in front of you, and they remember who you are, and they can click accept, as opposed to a week from now they're going, did I meet this person? When they get this random LinkedIn request, even if it says, glad to meet you at such and such trade show, you know, because, you know, we all try to be a little careful. Well, most of us anyway, with our connection list.
Let me ask you, Lee, while I got you, you know, you brought up that idea of business cards. And I remember, you know, I'm old, maybe 10, 15 years ago now, where, you know, the big discussion was the look, the feel of a card, the quality of the paper. Is that stuff still important?
I would think so. I would think so, because, I mean, it's all about what the impression that you make. And, you know, it's like, you know, here we go. My own personal little networking business cards I made up. And, you know, I picked stuff that represent me, and these are good. I think these were Vistaprint. They're good quality, heavy cards, and they're not expensive. And, you know, the last conference I went to, I handed them out by the, you know, by the handful to people. And I got lots of people contacting me, asking for calls and whatever else. And I wasn't looking for business. I was just making contacts. But it's something you can throw in a wallet. You know, you can write, you know, I didn't do the two sides, so you can write notes on the back if you need to. And I will, a lot of times when somebody gives me a business card, I'll jot a note on the back, something about them. something that we talked about, something, whatever else. So then when I follow up later, I can say, hey, do you remember that conversation that we had? It's a little old school thing for, I'm sure some of the newer people probably hadn't thought of, but us elders have done. But anything you can do for a mnemonic aid is helpful.
Yeah, there's probably people listening going, what's a business card? Lauren, let's go back to you.
There's so much good content here. I'm like, ooh, I got to remember this. Ooh, I got to remember to talk about this. So yeah, I feel like to kind of sum up a little bit of what we said so far, there requires a little bit of upfront investment on your part, right? Whether you're a new graduate or you're looking to get into either consulting or pro bono, and that investment could be monetary or it could be your time. It could be the time to look into the appropriate contacts for you. It could be the time to look into the industry you want to break into. It could be getting business cards, you know, setting up maybe a personal website that showcases the work you've done. And that could be your graduate work. It could be work you've done for other pro bono opportunities, but a landing page that's maybe not your LinkedIn, where people can see like, well, what do you have to offer? Like how, what are you going to give me if you come here? And I would say everything that's been talked about should be utilized. It's not like a, you only advertise on LinkedIn or you only have, like, do it all. You truly do it all, because people respond differently to different stimuli, right? So some people might be very receptive to me meeting with them at PSYOP and saying, hey, do you mind if I connect with you on LinkedIn, right? Verbal confirmation and then connecting with them on LinkedIn. Some people might respond better to, hey, here's my business card. And they've got like a nice booklet of business cards. Like everybody's different. When I broke out into consulting on my own, people would laugh at me because I would take my business cards to meetings. And if I went to a talk, I would put my business card on the seat of every single chair. I didn't talk to anyone yet, but I was just like, boop, 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 because someone's going to pick it up. And maybe they'll be interested enough to see what's going on or look me up. I also was on LinkedIn for, hey, I'm looking for work, or this is the work I can provide. So yeah, I mean, these are all really great ways to get yourself out there. And I would say utilize multiple avenues. Don't try to stick with one, but kind of put your energy into the ones that you feel will be most beneficial for what your goal is.
Thank you very much for that. Dr. Matthew, back to you.
I want to repeat something that Dr. Martha had shared, because it struck me and just I valued it so much. You are only limited by your imagination. And Lee provided amazing echoing of that, where there's so many different opportunities and different ways that you can network and engage and find pro bono, but also the other way around. When you are doing these pro bono and pro social jobs, when you're saying, hey, look, I'm trying to get my experience, trying to cut my teeth, trying to apply these things that I learned in class, let me see what it looks like in the real world, documenting those for yourself. Because what Lauren just said, when you have a different landing page other than LinkedIn, if somebody goes to that, they may want to see a case study page, and they're not looking for a 3 to 5 page paper. They're looking for one document that says, here was the problem, here was what the request, here was what we did, here's the outcome, so that they can say, oh, okay, these people, this person knows a little bit about what they're doing. And the other thing with that, with when you are working, let's go with, for example, when you're volunteering with a nonprofit, doing pro bono with a nonprofit, typically nonprofits, especially smaller local community nonprofits, they're made up of volunteers as well. Those volunteers work for so many other companies, and they just got a free preview of what you can provide, the insight that you can bring, the questions and the conversations. And they may or may not know somebody right away, but they may know somebody down the road. And wouldn't it be nice to be that person when they're in a conversation with someone else and they say, you know, I know somebody who we can call. I know somebody who can help us with this. So that pro bono and pro social, yes, it is very beneficial to the organizations and the individuals that you're serving. And there are some benefits back to you. It's all about, again, you are only limited by your imagination, and the way that you approach it and the way that you embrace it and document it and really own that process, you have unlimited potential.
You know what? And if you ever struggle with that imagination, you know, getting power, if you feel you've got a dry spell, get yourself a friend who's a creative artist, and take them for coffee, and they'll give you tons of free advice. Dr. Alexander, back to you.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you so much. So kind of one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, yeah, business cards are such a useful aspect. I did those during undergrad. I think you can really make a lot of positive impacts with those aspects of networking. Kind of looking beyond just those aspects, though, we can also look at the websites. We can build websites for ourselves pretty cheaply nowadays and be able to showcase, you know, these are our skills that we can do. Being able to create something that is a personal brand that's with on your own site, making newsletters, just little pro tips that you can send to local businesses can be a huge help. Podcasts as well can be a huge help to bring those skills and build your personal awareness. We've had those questions in the past on here. If someone's looking to move somewhere else, that's a really great way to start showcasing what you can do from afar, because you can always find business leaders' emails and stuff to be able to start just kind of seeing if they want to listen to you and potentially be able to bring yourself new clients in.
And you know what? You're absolutely right, especially about the podcast. You know, we meet every single week, and, you know, just being here helps all of us that are on screen. It ups our profile. So if you're listening to the Work Cookie podcast and you want to increase your profile, join us every Thursday, noon Eastern time, and get your face on this screen. Speaking of which, Ryan, it's nice to see you. Welcome to Work Cookie. Go ahead.
Hello, y'all. My name is Ryan Ruffner, and I got a couple things actually to cover about this. The first one is kind of not exactly pro bono, but that is that if you're a student or anybody really, and you want to get involved in IO psychology, I would recommend first searching for internships over pro bono work, because companies that do internships are going to have structures set up to support you, possibly to mentor you. Even if they're free, which basically, you know, makes them pro bono work, then you will be able to network with more people and, you know, exist in a company that has procedures and processes set up for that kind of thing already. So you don't have to completely pitch them on this new idea of doing pro bono work. That said, you can also look for organizations that pride themselves on doing pro bono work in particular. So, for example, I know not everybody lives in Texas, but there's a great organization called Minerva Work Solutions in Texas, with some highly, highly qualified, incredible IO psychologists, and they love doing pro bono work. I've done some pro bono work with them before. The other thing I would say is if you're a student, there's a couple things that you should do when it comes to networking in general and pro bono work in particular. One of those is to speak in the case studies you've worked on and the projects you've done at school. Okay, so for example, you could say, I've researched this or that, but it is more meaningful if you say, I have researched actual companies and their responses to organizational change management problems. And here's a project that I have been graded and given like high marks for by professional IO psychologists, maybe people who have been in the consulting workplace before. And this is how I actually have some more concrete IO experience through my education than just doing papers and things like that. The other thing is to speak in value outcome statements and in layman's terms when you are meeting with people. So if you say, I'm an IO psychologist, most of the companies that you could help with your IO psychology have no idea what that is. Okay. So if you're going to say, I'm an IO psychologist, you should explain that in simple terms, but then also say what you do specifically, what you're passionate about specifically in simple terms. So for example, I like selection and assessment. So I say, I create systems to hire the most productive, high performing people you can possibly get. Most people seem to understand what that is over IO psychology. The last thing is to leverage the startup environment. Okay, those companies really need people. And fortunately for you, they don't have a lot of the systems that IO psychologists can design. They don't have a lot of those designed yet, which means you have a lot of work to do and you have a lot of variety of work to do. So if you're a student, particularly one who's kind of jack of all trades right now, just coming out of your program, but you don't know exactly where you want to specialize, working in a startup environment can give you exposure to all different kinds of IO psychology and get you get your foot wet in a bunch of different directions. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ryan. Great advice. And especially, you know, if you've got a website, start doing video. If you want to be perceived as an expert, start with that. Talk about what you know. Talk about your expertise. Just make sure you're doing good videos, especially with good audio, because people will not forgive bad audio. And you want them coming back and back. You want to be like Dr. Martha, who does YouTube and all that stuff and does it really, really well. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, one thing that jumps out to me, we talk about, you know, trying to get your foot in the door and, you know, as students or job seekers, you know, part of the idea of pro-social work is, you know, it's good for the community. So if it's what gets you started, don't forget to keep doing that down the road and keep paying that forward as we go along and create opportunities for other people. And as we talk about, you know, upping profiles and things like that, I think to your point, Tom, quality is important. Whether it's paid work or unpaid work, the quality is important. You know, we may think business cards are a thing of the past, but you hand somebody, you know, an 8.5 by 11 that you've cut up into business cards, it's not going to make the same professional impact that it does if you do card stock and put some thought and effort into the design of it.
Very, very, very true. Linda Ann, over to you.
So I want to build on what Ryan was saying, because one of the things first, no matter whether you're looking for pro bono work or to be paid or whatever, it's really important, as Ryan had mentioned, to have a very, very clear message and understand what that value proposition is that you're bringing to the table. For example, you know, with what I do, it's very easy for me to say, well, if, you know, I work on a lot of different things, but one of them is employee engagement, right? So if I save you from having turnover of one employee at a rate of, you know, an average salary of $50,000, then I've saved you $25,000, and that covers a significant amount of consulting fee, right? So having that value proposition just initially, that one thing, helps. But also having a very clear message of what you do and how you do it. You know, a couple of years ago, I took a program and it had us develop this 3-tiered, 9-step process that when I speak with somebody, I can take them right through that and they know exactly what I'm going to provide to them and why it makes sense. And it's a one-page thing, and that's really helpful. The other thing too is to look at a lot of cities throughout the country have what's called startup weeks. And I agree with Ryan on this again. What we have to offer is very helpful to startups. And when I first started consulting, I thought, oh, I'd work for companies that have like 50 to 300 and so forth. What I've realized is companies at the 10 to 15 stage is where it's really most important, because they're just starting to feel the pain. They don't have any of their systems in place, and you can get in and help them set things up correctly from the get-go, and you don't have to unlearn, undo, and then reinstall and all those kinds of things. So I would think about that as well. But the startup weeks, I mean, they're going to, like for Denver, they're going to start taking applications for presentations for the startup week in probably a month. It happens in September. And you can also post articles. You can volunteer, get connected with everybody there who's working with all these startups that are going to attend, get your act together to really use that as a way of getting your foot in the door with a whole lot of programs. There's also tech startup weeks that just focus on the tech industry. So there's good ways to get in, and that can really be what I call a feeder for us, in that puts you in a situation where there's always new contacts coming in that you can make yourself familiar with, or make them familiar with you.
Yes, that sounds really good. Alexander, back to you.
So talking about video, this was part of what I was initially raising my hand for, but forgot. TikTok. A lot of us could really, especially the younger ones, could get on TikTok to just discuss the knowledge that we have. And that would be a really great way to bring awareness to not only IO psychology itself, but to the local community and topics. If you kind of want to be decisive, you can talk about generational topics. People love that. And there's just lots of ways to kind of get in there and just bring awareness. You're muted, Tom.
Great advice. I'd love to be on TikTok, but it scares the heck out of me. Because, you know, I have gray hair. Alana, hello and welcome to Work Cookie. Let's go to you.
Hi. So this one is something for, I would mostly say students, because it's where I started at when I was pursuing my degree. But if you're still working a full-time job, using the things that you're learning as you are learning them to apply them where you are. So even if it's outside of the scope of your job, if your leadership is open and willing to you doing something, say maybe starting like a leadership, whatever it is that you're passionate about. For me, it was leadership, but helping set up a leadership program for the job. Was that my actual job scope? No, but it was something that I was allowed to do when I asked. And it gave me the experience to be able to build that up. So definitely would recommend taking advantage of where you are and seeing what opportunities are there first. If you're kind of nervous to get out and do the networking events and to do this and to do that, if you're comfortable where you are and you're still learning, don't be afraid to kind of plug into and ask those questions where you are with the people that you know, just to kind of build up your confidence a little bit and to kind of move forward from there.
Can you give us some advice on how to actually do that? Because, you know, I've been in situations where I've offered, you know, some advice to leadership and, you know, didn't go too well.
So I would recommend first making sure that you're on the same page with whatever leader it is. If it's somebody that thinks that the organization is doing a phenomenal job and they could do no wrong and you know it's the exact opposite because you're in the organization, then that's probably not the best person to work with. But if you know somebody else, if you can kind of identify maybe like a kindred spirit that's after some of the same things, then maybe it may not be your team that you're working on, but maybe just kind of helping somebody else out in that area. That way you're not as likely to get shut down as quickly compared to being like, oh, hey, this is going horribly. Let me help you out. Just making sure that somebody is already open to the idea and wanting to do better in that area before offering to kind of spend some extra time doing what it is that you enjoy that can tie IO psychology to whatever it is organization needs.
Well, that's some great advice I could have used a couple of years ago. But thank you very much now. Rich, let's go to you.
So as somebody who belongs to more associations and organizations than anybody should ever, ever invest in your life, I will tell you, one way you can get involved, though, is before you join an association, go to a meeting, take a look at the chapters, you know, get involved in just taking a look at and be judicious about what you join. Just I belong to some organizations at my church. I belong to, Boy Scouts of America and just some of the other community places around here and then some other, you know, national places. And if you just show up and take things slow, take it small, listen to what the needs are, somewhere somebody's going to say, we're looking for somebody who can help us with XYZ thing, right? And then maybe you chime in and go, okay, I'll go and take a look at that committee and maybe sit in a meeting and take a look. And I've just found myself, I started that way. Like I did not want to get like, you know, as a committee chair or something like that starting off. Right. And when you start small though, and you make, you know, little, contributions here and there, those things grow and people start to notice. And then they, you know, it'll snowball until you, you know, trying to be roped into every committee within every organization that you belong to. So, you know, you have to be judicious about it, but there are plenty of opportunities to be able to contribute. I think just the most important thing is to be present, you know, socially. And, you know, some of these things are virtual, you know. IMC USA belong there. I'm the CMC committee chair there. That's an entirely virtual thing, but over here, you know, locally, I'll show up to, I was at a Chamber of Commerce, meeting yesterday. This one I belong to, but I've been to ones where I don't belong to them. And I've gone to networking events where I don't belong to that organization yet. And I have to weigh in whether or not I want to be part of that, you know, but, you know, all of those give you some opportunity to be able to, you know, figure out where you want to go, where you belong, and you know, where you want to stay. You know, sometimes it's time to hit the road and find something else. But
Yep, I've spoken with a lot of Toastmaster groups, and it's just a great way to go in and talk to people about voice and speech and using their voice, and it's really beneficial. Lauren, let's go back to you.
Yeah, so I want to drive home, especially as we talk about pro bono and giving your, right, it's essentially giving your time. You're giving your time for not necessarily an immediate return, if you will, that just because you can provide something doesn't mean you should. And I think that's important to remember, especially when you're getting started, you know, and especially as a either newbie into the industry or recent grad, we might be eager to build our name, build our credibility and say like, yeah, I can build a performance improvement plan. But if you stop and say to yourself, like, is that something I want to spend my time on, my personal time on, right? Is that something that I'm passionate about? Is that something I'm even really that, is that one of my strengths that I can play to? Or am I just saying yes because they need it and I want the work? You know, like trying to have that honest conversation with yourself to make sure that the investment, as I spoke about earlier, that you are putting in matters to you as well. And as we've talked about, it's also going to follow you in some way, right? You're building your reputation. And so if you say yes to something that maybe you're not so passionate about or you don't have a strong suit in, you could be setting yourself up for, I don't want to say failure necessarily, but not a good outcome. So yeah, having those talks with yourself to say, and Rich touched upon this a little bit at the end of what he was just saying, is this something I want to do? Does this align with my values and what I can give? And do I want to spend the time doing that? I think that's important to remember.
Yeah, be authentic in all things and it'll keep you out of a lot of trouble. Gabby, welcome to Work Cookie. Let's go to you.
I think I want to kind of go back a little bit to what Alana was saying, because as a first generation, like this conversation would have been perfect a year ago before I graduated and before I realized that I needed to do the internships and all of these things. And now that I am on the other side and I've finally completed all that stuff, it's like, okay, so now what? And I have a background in counseling. And for the longest time, I just feel so discouraged because I believe that that wasn't really getting me into the door, that I didn't have the experience, I didn't have everything that everybody's looking for outside of that field, right? And I think one of the biggest things that I've learned coming to all of these meetings and conversations is that because IO is so unconventional, everybody can just forge their own path and create their own unique thing. I've been able to use what I have because, you know, sometimes we're not able to just go on internships and do all the fun stuff. And, you know, we got bills and we got a life and we got the adulting thing to do. So I've really worked on, and with the help of a lot of people with different conversations, I worked on using what I have, kind of what Alana was saying, like, if this is where I have to be, these are the skills that I have, how do I use them in an IO perspective? And how do I implement and bring all of these things together to make it work for whoever. And then as I'm going, I'm implementing all of these other things and hoping that one day I'll have the time to just do all the fun stuff. But I think that's something that I don't know if anybody's at that point where, you know, you don't know where to go or you just can't financially, which is certainly with today's economy, you know, something that can definitely just what do you have right now within your tool set and can you use to move forward? That's something that really took me out of that dark place of like, I'm way behind to wait, no, I can actually use what I know and then frame it in a different way. So definitely. But I would have loved to have this a year ago. Definitely. I wouldn't have loved to learn this way. If it would have been easier, I would have taken that.
Well, thank you very much for that. And you know, Jeremy's doing some great work, and as the CBOC organization is, in getting Work Cookie into universities and colleges. And I think, if you're just new into the IO field, if you're a student, you need to come here once a week or at least listen to the Work Cookie podcast, because as Jeremy often says, we talk about the stuff that they don't talk about while you're in school that you really need to know. And I see a couple of hands up, so there may be some, you know, expertise coming your way. Ryan, let's go back to you.
Thank you. Yeah, so one of the things that really helped me, and I recommend this to every student, it was actually one of the things that I recommended to the class that was coming into my program as we were leaving. Keep a journal, not just about what you worked on, right, which is something that Lee mentioned earlier, but on how much you liked it, what you liked about it, and why you liked it. Okay, this is important because one of the benefits and curses of IO psychology is the fact that we can go just about anywhere, which means we have a lot of options. But on the flip side, it means we almost have too many options. We need to really narrow down where we're going to go and what we're going to do. This is also important, keeping this kind of journal about what you like and what you don't like, what you're good at, what you're not good at, because when you graduate, or just when you're unemployed, sometimes the desperation of finding a job can lead you to compromise on what you really want, or to trick yourself into thinking, well, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad for me, for example, to do something that you really hate, like data analytics. I can't stand data analytics, okay? I know some people who absolutely love it. Like, I don't get it, okay? They're literally like, oh my God, Excel spreadsheets. Hell yes. Weirdos, okay? Bless their hearts, but you know, what the hell? But there are people who like that, right? So I had to keep a journal to remind myself, like, you know, I actually don't like this. Because when you're unemployed or you just graduate and you're desperate for a job, you can trick yourself into thinking, well, maybe it wouldn't be that bad. It's like, well, no, hold on. What are your actual goals here? What do you really want to do? What do you really want to focus on? The other thing I would say is to set a goal and a purpose for your pro bono work. For example, are you doing pro bono work because you don't know what field of IO psychology you want to specialize in, and so this is kind of like a self-discovery thing? Are you doing it because you do know, but you are trying to get experience in that particular avenue of IO psychology? What is the specific goal that you're trying to work towards so that you can measure whether or not you're making meaningful progress toward it? And then finally, I would say to set a deadline for the pro bono work that you're doing, because you don't want to basically just say, oh, I'll do whatever for this or that reason, and then the company says, oh, we need you to do something else. We need you to do something else. And then before you know it, a year or two has gone by and you haven't gotten paid and it hasn't become anything more. Okay, so set a deadline with yourself and with them. It could be a deadline based on, like, you know, time, like a year, 6 months. It could be a deadline in terms of once this project is complete. And then also, you know, bring up early on the possibility of being hired. Say, look, I will do this for 6 months to a year, or I will complete this project. But then after this is done, I want to talk about the possibility of transitioning this into a full-time job. Is that something you would be open to? And then if they say yes, then okay, great. I get that in writing, by the way, you know. If they say no, then at least you know where you stand. So you're not hoping it will lead to something, and you don't have to you know, face the disappointment later on after you've given them hours and hours of your, you know, blood, sweat, and tears.
Great advice once again. Thank you very much, Ryan. Dr. Matthew, back to you.
So to quickly touch on something that both Gabby and Ryan talked about, first to Gabby, thank you for sharing your story of that uncertainty, because I would be willing to bet there are a number of other people either on this call or listening to this podcast who feel the same way. And when you say that, when you speak that story, they're going, I'm not alone. There are others that experience this. Okay, cool. I'm on the right track. Even if I don't see the right track all the time, I got it going in the right direction. So thank you for speaking up on that. And to echo what Ryan was saying, you know, sometimes in those moments of that uncertainty, there can be, we can maybe lose sight of what our intention is, or where our passion, or what this is an area that I'm really good at. Another job might come up that, well, I can do that, but is it something I really want to spend my time doing? And in those moments of desperation, we may fall into that, which maybe saying fall into that is not the right phrase, because it's not always a bad thing there if you look at it as a learning opportunity. But together, both of those pieces, holding those boundaries that say, I could apply for that. I could take the time to craft my resume, craft my cover letter, apply for that job, go through the interview process, but really, would that be something that I'm wanting? Or would I be better off waiting, finding a better opportunity and going towards that? And then also holding those boundaries with those organizations that we do those pro bono and pro social work, saying, I would love to be able to help you with X. this has a defined end date at this date, whether and that can be determined based off of the completion of the project or a calendar. After 6 months, wherever we are at that point, my service is done, and I'm going to pass you off to somebody, because there's also holding your own value, saying I've given a lot of time to that point, and either I need to be paid or this project takes a lot more effort and it needs to be something that is paid for, whether they pay me or not. So being able to hold those boundaries. And the irony of it is that as IOs, there's moments where we almost, it's like the doctor becomes the patient. We know how to tell organizations how to do this. We go in and we're telling, you know, we work with companies and leaders and we say, you know, be focused on your mission and your vision or your purpose, you know, whatever it may be. Here's how to increase your employees' engagement and et cetera, et cetera. And we sometimes forget that in the same way, we also, as professionals, we need to stay focused on what our mission is. My mission might be different than yours because my area of expertise or my area of passion is going to be slightly different. And so being able to hold those and sort of take the medicine that we're also prescribing to organizations, it's kind of that irony or that catch-22 where the patient becomes the doctor and the doctor becomes the patient.
Yes, very, very true. Lauren, back to you.
I wanted to build a little bit on something Gabby had said earlier. A part of going out into, you know, finding pro bono opportunities or opportunities in general is you need to really flex your strategic muscle. And you need to not only say what is being presented to me, but you need to be able to have the foresight to see what can I make out of this, right? And that was also mentioned a little bit with getting involved with startups. I myself did that. I saw a startup opportunity. The job was posted as a management assistant, but the job duties spoke more about HR. And I said, I'm getting my MBA. I'm going to make this what I know it needs to be. And I was able to take that creativity and that opportunity and make it what I saw it needed to be, right? Based on my recommendations, based on my knowledge, but also using that strategic foresight to say, you don't know you need this, but I do. And so we're going to talk about it. And so really putting on your strategy hat is important for seeing these opportunities as well. It's not just what's out there in front of you, but being able to see what can be and bringing it to fruition. And then I also want to take us full circle here and go back to what we spoke about with trade shows and conferences. And those are really, really great opportunities to showcase your skills, right? Submit that paper, submit that poster. Do not be afraid. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to get feedback, and that's going to make it stronger for next time. So, you know, if you want to get yourself out there, you want to network, you want to position yourself as a, you know, a subject matter expert in a certain area, definitely go out there and don't just walk the floors, but make sure that you're speaking, make sure that people see what you have to offer. And again, if you submit to these conferences or trade shows or what have you, and you get turned down, you're still likely going to get feedback, and that will be helpful for you. So there's no opportunity lost in doing that.
Yeah, that's one of the ways I started, was speaking at conferences, and it's great. It's a great way to do it. I wanted to ask you, because, you know, as Gabby mentioned, a lot of this information would have been great a year ago, and there's going to be a lot of students who are listening to the Work Cookie podcast. So what are you doing? Like, what has your experience been? Where are you on social media? Did you have a website when you first started and then went, oops, maybe I need a website? So what are some of those basics that all students who are about to enter the real world, where do they need to start?
Yeah, great question. And I feel like I utilized almost everything that everybody said here, whether or not I was starting my consulting business or now as a student. Definitely, I leverage LinkedIn. And leveraging LinkedIn doesn't only mean posting your own content. It also means supporting those who are in your field and who are doing things that align with what you want to do, right? So I recently saw another PhD student at another university. I briefly know her. She posted something, I reposted it, right? Because what I'm doing is I'm taking her information, I'm sharing it, I did something nice for her. Maybe it will be reciprocated at some point. And so it's not just about putting your thought leadership out there, which it's also great to do because you can post for free, you can tag people, you can network, but you can also lift others up, and that will also come back to you in a very positive way. When I started my consulting business, and maybe this is because my husband is in tech, but I was like, I need a website. I can't go out to people and say like, hire me. And they're like, great, what's your website? And I'm like, LinkedIn. So yes, website, you can do it through Google. You can do it through, I don't even remember what I used at this point, but it's not expensive. And truly it can be your name. It could be some services that you offer, a little bit about yourself. Start with something. Start with a nice headshot and about me, maybe your education section, and you can build from there. But if you don't have a landing page for people to see, I feel, my personal opinion, is it kind of hinders your credibility a little bit. Just to, it's so simple. Why not do it? So those would be two that I would say are important, but I'd like to hear what Linda Ann has to say as well.
Well, I'll go to Linda Ann in a second, but you said the word headshot, and I'm an actor. And I know that because I've also looked at, you know, everyone needs a good photo. And this started to happen about 10, 15 years ago, where business people actually started to use the same photographers that we use. And it really upped their game. But I still see business people in their website and they got their photo at Walmart. So, you know, don't use Walmart. No. You know, get yourself a really good photographer. They will be a little pricey. I think I spend, you know, somewhere between $250 and $300 for a really good quality headshot. And it takes, you know, an hour or two to really get comfortable with that photographer and work so you can get that really good shot. So who does your photos?
Who does my photos? Well, it's going to be a funny plug here because my current LinkedIn photo, my 9-year-old took with my iPhone on portrait mode. Ayo. Yes. So there are various ways to do it. You can definitely invest the money. I think if you can, you should, because you will have a bigger variety. For students who might not have the ability, get yourself a tripod, put your phone on it on portrait mode and just go to town. Click, click, click. I kid you not, you will find something. Additionally, I know that PSYOP does. I don't know if other conferences do, but PSYOP usually has people giving headshots. Like they have photographers there and they are for free. I'm not sure if other conferences do that and if they're for free as well, but there are some opportunities to get those headshots. I know people have used them as well. And also here's like another pro bono opportunity. If you know someone who's a photographer, ask them, hey, I need a headshot for my resume, for my website. Would you mind? And likely they're not going to mind, or they'll at least give you like a discounted rate, you know? So we do have the technology. Don't be afraid to use it. No one's going to see what you don't post, right? So go for it.
Yeah. And the same advice, you know, when you're young or you're just out of school and you're starting off and you want to do things like video, you know, this is like a $75 mic. It's a really good quality mic at that price. I also have a $1,200 mic for when I'm doing voiceover work, but you can start relatively cheap. Linda Ann, over to you.
I just wanted to mention to what Lauren was saying about, you know, when you have your website and things like that, it's really important to address a need that you think your target audience has. In other words, when you pop up, when you have just a landing page and you can do that through, you know, Canva or whatever, but when they get there, it's important for them that you're not just talking about you, because they don't give a damn about you, honestly. It's them, right? What need can you solve that I have? And so make sure you have that one sentence answer so that you can build your website around that. And that's the focus. And that's the thing. How do you figure that out? When you're talking to other people about IO or business or whatever it is, what's that one thing that you always end up saying, I can't believe they aren't paying attention to this? You know, and you end up talking about that almost every conversation that comes in with work topics. So make sure you're aware of what's that one thing that you always go to, whether you're sitting in your college dorm room and you're talking about it while you're sitting on the floor with your buddies, or whether it's, you know, at different conferences and people say, well, what do you do? And so really, really figure out what's that one thing, one problem that you can solve for an organization.
Yeah, I'm always reminding speakers, you know, don't focus on the what you want to say, focus on the what they need to hear. But with all this in mind, Linda Ann, you know, we also have to focus on the ask. It's great to do a presentation, to speak to a group, or even have a one-on-one conversation. But at some point, you have to present them with the, this is all great, and you should really do this, so should we talk? So do you have any advice on that? Or do you totally disagree with me?
No, absolutely not. I never disagree with you, Tom. couple of things, just war stories of my own. So one thing is I initially say, okay, I'll give you some discovery meetings. I run a 3-meeting process, costs $500 just for that. And we go through their systems so that we have conversation about their systems. And then we can say, then they can come to the realization of what they're missing, right? Then it's easier to open that door and say, you know, do you want to talk? It's also important to give them, like I told you, I have this kind of map that's 3 stages, 3 steps in each stage. It's a process, and we can decide where to start. And there's a whole nother conversation around that. The other thing too is when you're pricing your services, have some awareness of what they charge their clients. So that, you know, for me, when I work with architects and engineers, I know that they are billing themselves out at $150 an hour. So that's a very palatable price to charge them, because that's what they charge for someone in their in an area of expertise. So those are just a couple of tips.
Those are great tips. Thank you very much for that. Alexander, back to you.
Wonderful tips there. All right. I'm going to kind of discuss the presentation and how you're presenting yourself. I think it's very, very important to look at where you want to be. What is the role that you want to be? We are psychologists. We should know in groups and out groups, how do those people look? Can we align our image to look more like that person that we're wanting to be in their LinkedIn profile pictures and stuff? When we're looking at how we want to do our setups with our photography and our kind of speech and image, we can start to align that to help us be able to be attractive to those people, kind of exactly like the pricing was just there. You know, that's an in-group. It makes them feel comfortable. So that's kind of where I was going.
That's a, you've opened up a whole nother field. I think we need another hour. But anyways, Dr. Martha, let's go to you.
Just a quick thing to add to Linda Ann's comment about what to charge people. You know, there's a big difference between doing pro bono work and being cheap. Not only do you need to understand your own value, you should not be priced at a discount, but you are also influencing others within your field. I have heard people complaining to one another about someone underpricing their services and hurting other people's business. The person who is being really cheap in their pricing cannot possibly take on all this business, but yet they make it more difficult for others within that field to justify their pricing now. So know your value and don't be afraid to charge what you're worth and what you're going to bring as a result of your efforts to that organization. If you want to do pro bono work, that's a whole different thing. But don't be on sale all your life, all your career. Let's not be a Walmart, right? Let's get paid what we're worth.
Yeah, doing that for your entire career is a great way to stay poor. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
So to what Dr. Martha is saying, it's really hard to say that stuff the first couple of times, but just keep saying it, right? Keep saying this is how much, and when you figure out how much time you're going to spend to deliver your service, you go, wow, they're getting, you know, this is a lot of time. So really think about, just keep saying it, and then it becomes very, very comfortable. And then just to what Ryan had said earlier about, I want to emphasize the kind of the point he was making, and that is to not choose just what you think you can get. Right? To really focus on, this is really what I do, what I want to do, what I'm passionate about, because you have to figure what arena do I want to play in. And you don't want to be 3 years further down the road and going, this sucks, right? So really think about what it is that feeds your soul, that you're passionate about and not fall for that, well, I think I can just get this. I get having to pay bills, believe me, I do. But really figure out what it is that you're passionate about and doors start to open.
Thank you very much for that, Linda Ann and Lauren. I think that's probably a really good place for us to end this conversation today. I always like talking about focusing on your passion. But any last words?
No, I think this was a great conversation today. I loved hearing everybody's perspective. I think this was very fruitful. I think the only thing I would add is PSYOP is coming up. If anyone's going and you do want to connect, I'll be there. I'm happy to connect. I'd love to speak. I'm on LinkedIn. So yeah, for anyone listening, if you are interested in anything we've said, like, look, I'm going to speak for everyone here. Look us up, right? We're on LinkedIn. We're out there. We're putting ourselves on this podcast because we want to help and we want to connect with people. So don't be afraid to send that request, connect and open up the doors. And I think that's where I'll put a pin in it.
And I think talking to Jeremy, there was quite a few little CBOC gatherings at PSYOP last year. So people are shaking their heads. They search out, they find each other. Other people are wondering what's going on, which is really cool. All right. Well, thank you much. Thank you very much, everyone. And this has been once again another great discussion, as it is every week. So, you know, if you've got the time on Thursdays at noon Eastern, do join us here live and we will add your voice to the conversation. Until then, it has been another great show and we'll see everyone in 1 week time. So, Lauren, if you would like to count us out, we'll see everyone back next week.
Oh, okay. And that is it in 3, 2, 1. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At CBOC.com.